Dissonance Media and the Other Stories presents. Step into the abyss of After the Gloaming, a gothic fiction podcast that delves into the depths of human emotion. Unyielding love, revenge, internal struggles, and restless souls await you in 9 haunting episodes, where dread, fear, and rare glimpses of eerie happiness linger. Dare to listen on your favorite podcatcher? After the Gloaming beckons. Search now, but beware. Innocence will be left behind.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
The Nest. Act 5. Enter the Nest.
Jamie, I really wish you'd let me drive. I at least have my learner's permit.
What Valerie said made perfect sense, but Jamie needed to feel like he was in control of something. First, his mom had been taken, and now Frank, too.
Don't worry, Val. I drive my mom's car all the time. I've got this.
Jamie wouldn't dream of admitting aloud that his driving experiences were solely from bringing his mom's car back from Shelley's when her drinking had first started to get bad. These drives had only been a couple of blocks, and never in weather like this. The car crawled along. Rain lashed mercilessly against the windscreen. Jamie poked at the interior controls in vain hope that the wipers had some previously hidden faster setting, capable of keeping up and making it easier to see anything up ahead.
If anything, I should be driving. It's my dad's car, after all,
Rahim chimed in from the back seat.
No offense, bud, but with you driving, your plan to wait until sunrise would have happened whether we'd all agreed or not.
They were all tired. Half of them were nursing injuries, and they'd spent the last couple of hours cobbling together weapons and equipment, ready to raid the location Isabel insisted the creature was nesting, and, more importantly, taking their family members. A few hours spent sleeping, applying better first aid and hoping that the storm eased up were all sensible ideas, but that thing had snatched his brother, and the faster Jamie could get to him, the better the chances of him coming home alive. Jamie glanced at the LCD clock, glowing with orange numbers on the dashboard. 3:17 a.m. Frank had been gone for about 4 hours. Was that already too long? Adjusting the rearview mirror, he turned his attention to the final member of the party in the back of the car. Isabel was rummaging through her backpack, taking stock of the items she'd brought along.
You going to insist you should be driving to complete the set?
Jamie scoffed.
Dude, I've been awake for God knows how long and almost definitely have a concussion. You go for it,
Isabel insisted.
Isabel, you sure you saw that thing land at school?
Valerie asked.
Well, now that you mention it, maybe I was confused and it was actually the mall,
Isabel returned sarcastically before continuing.
I'm sure I saw it land on the roof edge with my mom. It was strutting around, screeching for a bit, and then it disappeared. The place is boarded up tight, so I couldn't get in, but I watched for a couple of hours and I didn't see it fly off anywhere else.
So our school is a monster nest. Figures, Jamie muttered.
Harpy,
Rahim corrected.
I'm certain it's a harpy. The weird mix of bird and woman. This weird storm, it certainly mean enough. If it's a harpy, does that make us Argonauts?
Isabel asked with a slight smile.
Argo-what?
Valerie queried. Jamie and the Argonauts. Does have something of a ring to it, Jamie quickly added. For a fleeting few moments, the surreal situation, the panic and worry, dissolved. And the group erupted into playful bickering about who was the leader of the mismatched group. Their fears momentarily forgotten in a cacophony of laughter. Jamie turned a final corner and the group fell silent once again. The car's high beams illuminated a familiar building up ahead. A few moments later, they bumped up the curb. We're here.
The school's main entrance burst open, and the group spilled in out of the rain, scattering themselves and their belongings across the hall floor. Valerie threw her jacket to the floor, wiped the rain from her face and retied her hair into a tight ponytail before seeing how the others were doing. Rahim and Isabel were together, at the other side of the hall. Jamie leaned against the wall just inside the school entrance. The bolt cutters and crowbar he'd used to battle through the chains and boarding used to secure the school discarded around him. Getting in had been harder work and had taken longer than he'd expected, and he was clearly tired from the exertion. Valerie placed her hand gently on his shoulder as he hunched over.
Nice job getting us in. Are you all right? She asked.
Wish Rahim would have just let me drive the car into the door like I wanted to.
Jamie spoke slowly between deep breaths.
I'll be fine. Just need a second.
Valerie decided to give Jamie some space to recover and address the others.
So, guys, we're inside. Now what?
We head up,
Rahim answered as he and Isabel walked over to join them. Everybody looked at the discolored ceiling above them.
The nest is either up on the roof or maybe whatever this place has in the way of attic space. We have to get up there,
Isabel explained.
Okay, so we get up there. Hopefully the harpy is out somewhere. We find our families and get everyone out, right?
Valerie said. She hoped it would be as simple as that, that it wouldn't be too late for everyone.
But if it's there...
Isabel brought up the possibility that Valerie was doing her best to try and ignore.
Then we kill it!
Jamie brought his recovered crowbar down on a radiator with a clang as he spoke, his previously tired expression replaced by a look of renewed determination. Valerie shifted the strap of the hunting rifle where it hung across the shoulder. Her dad had taught her to shoot it on a camping trip last summer when he'd taken a rare day off. Picking up on how to load and shoot the rifle had gone pretty well, but she'd been very clear with her dad that she refused to shoot any living creature. Valerie looked around at the rest of the group as they each examined their own equipment, far more cobbled together and makeshift, with not much else you'd consider an actual weapon. She began to feel a creeping anxiety that the group would be looking to her to make the difference, if things got ugly.
You doing okay, Valerie? Rahim asked. Yeah, I'm ready,
Valerie confirmed.
No, actually, hold on.
Reaching into her coat pocket, Valerie retrieved the birthday present Leslie had given her on the last day before school had been closed and her dad had vanished.
If we die here, At least I have celebrated my birthday.
She grinned. She tugged again at the bundle of sellotape with no success, but this time she wouldn't let it beat her.
Somebody toss me a knife.
Jamie pulled a penknife from his pocket, unfolded the blade and handed it over. The blade was a little dull, but it was more than enough to make short work of the tape, and her gift was finally free. As the paper fell away, a smile crossed Valerie's lips.
What'd you get?
Jamie shone his torch at the bundle in Valerie's hands.
It's some permanent markers,
she said softly.
Markers?
Jamie said.
Fat use they are.
Valerie ignored him.
It's silly, really. Back when I first made friends with Leslie, my mum was babysitting for her kid brother. She'd fallen asleep on the sofa while Leslie and I actually hung out with him. He drew on my mum's face with a marker, glasses, mustache, the lot. We somehow all kept straight faces until Leslie's mum came home. She was so angry.
The markers rested on a slab of chocolate. Valerie's favourite kind, too. Pocketing the pens, Valerie held the bar aloft victoriously.
Share this with me, guys?
After some faux token protests of not needing to share her birthday present, the other three, none of them having had a proper meal for some time, all sat in a circle on the floor of their school's entrance and tucked into the chocolate ravenously, mumbling thanks and happy birthday through mouths full of chewy nougat.
Hey, Val, throw me one of those markers, would you?
Jamie asked. Obliging, Valerie tossed him one of the markers from her pocket.
If we don't make it out of this, we should at least leave our mark.
Jamie uncapped the marker and began to draw on the corridor tiles. Understanding, the others signalled for markers and copied his example, each writing something on the ground in a different colour. Valerie wrote,
Love you, Dad. If I don't survive, Leslie, thanks for the present.
Followed by a smiley face. It was all she could think of in the moment. Jamie had written simply,
For my brother.
Isabel scrawled,
Victoria Carlson says, Principal Weil is a dork.
She explained that this was her mum in response to confused looks. Finally, after some thought, Raheem wrote,
It's just what mum would have done. Love you, Dad.
And then a heart shape with R plus I inside it, adding an arrow and flames after Isabel had initially teased him for being lame.
Okay.
Jamie stood back up as he spoke.
Everyone, make sure you have everything you need.
Valerie knelt to check her backpack as she heard the distinctive thud of Isabel's heavy boots next to her.
Hey, look, I know we've never really got on.
Isabel began.
It's fine. Can't be friends with everyone, right?
Valerie looked up at Isabel with a smile. Not getting on was a slight understatement. She'd been pretty sure Isabel hated her.
No, it's not really fine. I can be a bit of a bitch sometimes. It's just, you seem to have it all. Most kids always say hi to you, and your dad is the sheriff, and he's always looking out for you, and I guess I just felt like...
Isabel paused. In their other, all less pleasant exchanges, Valerie had never seen Isabel struggle for words.
Isabel, it's fine, Valerie said. I wish it hadn't taken a mythical creature kidnapping our parents to get us talking, but we're here now. And I can't think of anyone else in school I'd rather have with me to fight a monster than you.
Harpy,
Raheem corrected as he overheard.
Thanks, Valerie. You're all right, you know.
Isabel returned her smile and offered her a hand to stand as Valerie zipped up her backpack.
Now, let's go kill this feathery bitch.
Raheem led the way as the group walked carefully through the school corridors, not wanting to make too much noise this close to the Harpy's lair. It was beyond surreal seeing their school, which they'd all only ever seen crowded with people and well lit, as they did now, dark and abandoned. Muddy streaks and footprints coated the corridor tiles. It looked like, when they closed the school due to the weather, not even the staff had been allowed in. Either that, or they'd fallen victim to the harpy too. With a shudder at the thought, he reached his free hand backwards to take Isabel's. She caught his hand and increased her pace to walk alongside him, the contents of her backpack clinking together as she moved. "How much did you get in the end?" Rahim asked.
"Managed to fill 2.5 jars of gasoline from the can in your dad's shed," Isabel explained. "Had to tip the pickles down the toilet to empty the jars, though. Sorry."
"Don't worry. At least you backed down on your idea to fill Frank's water gun with gasoline. You'd have burned your face off." Isabel gave an exaggerated look of horror.
"You're saying you wouldn't be into me anymore if I burned my face? You're just like all the other boys."
"Well," Rahim continued, "would you still at least have that awesome hair?" She squeezed his hand a little tighter. They were silent for a second.
"You think fire'll kill it?" Rahim added. "Fire kills everything. I'd have roasted all Jamie Lee bird tits back at my house had it not gotten outside into the rain. This time, we have better fuel and rope to hold it down. Plus, Valerie has her dad's rifle, and then there's... well, there's your camera."
Now it was Rahim's turn to give an exaggerated, hurt look as he cradled his mum's old camera. "The camera saved us back at my house. It didn't seem to like the flash. I'm guessing its eyes are probably better in the dark. Or maybe, as it's always flying in that storm, it imagines that the bright flashes are lightning, and it doesn't want to be near that."
"Solid theories, Doc. I knew I wasn't just with you for your looks."
Isabel grinned. As the group moved up toward the second floor of the school building, the effects of the weather became more obvious. Dark patches of damp could be seen bleeding from the ceiling. There were leaks in the roof. Rahim took a deep breath through his nose as he tried to identify the smell. There was an unpleasant odor in the air, like rot and festering food. He'd smelled something a little similar once when their freezer had broken in the summer and all the food in there had gone bad.
"There's a maintenance room up by the lockers, guys. I reckon that's where the attic access will be."
Rahim spoke in a stage whisper. He had a feeling that they were getting close. The lockers were just up ahead, along with a wooden door labelled Staff Only. It was locked, of course, but before Rahim could even draw breath to ask, Jamie went at it with his crowbar. Unlike the external doors, this old door wasn't intended to keep anything more than nosy kids out. The old wood and locking mechanisms bent to the iron will of the crowbar, and the door swung open. The group stood in the entryway, their torch beams searching the ceiling.
"Jackpot!
How do we get up there?" Valerie was the first to notice the lack of any type of ladder in the storeroom.
"Shit! Frank doesn't have time for this!"
Jamie was clearly frustrated with the idea of being so close, only to find another barrier in front of them. Isabel stepped forward.
"Somebody give me a boost."
Isabel slung her torch into the attic ahead of her. The attic was crowded with wooden support beams, but large enough for her to stand at full height. It was the smell that hit her first. The stench of rotten roadkill almost made her gag. Steadying herself, she continued further into the attic. Up ahead, she could make out a large hole in the roof, rain pouring in as the storm continued to rage outside. There was something else to the side of the opening, a large pile of something she couldn't identify. Swallowing her nerves, she edged forward, checking the kitchen knife was still safely tucked into her belt. With a squeal, the walkie-talkie Jamie had given her sprang to life and almost made her jump out of her skin.
"Isabel, you okay?"
Rahim's voice came through, slightly distorted.
"Dude, I've been gone 30 seconds!
Isabel hissed back into the device. Valerie and Jamie have gone to grab tables and chairs from one of the classrooms. We'll be up as soon as we can, Rahim explained. Do you see anything? There's something up ahead. I'm going to check it out. Be careful. When am I ever? Isabel left it at that and continued forward. As she approached, the floorboards began to grow sticky, coated in a matted mess of feathers and gunk. The pile she'd seen from the attic entrance was a huge tangle of branches and other debris, all stacked together and coated in more of the feathery mess. It looked like a bird's nest. With a sudden sense of vulnerability, Isabel shone her torchlight around the nest itself in a panicked and frantic search for the harpy. Thankfully, there was no sign of it. While focusing her attention upwards, Isabel had neglected to watch her feet and she stepped on something that shattered and crunched under her boot. Glancing down, Isabel saw the remains of what might once have been a rodent or a small cat. The whole floor was littered with bones and other remains, the pile of carcasses growing thicker as she got closer to the nest itself. Isabel was about to reach back for the radio when she noticed something that stopped her in her tracks. A mass of bizarre cocoons were lined up at the base of the nest. They were all made of the same sticky gunge that seemed to coat everything up here. Some of the smaller ones contained decomposing animals, but there were larger ones too. Isabel shone her light on the closest pod. Valerie's father was inside.
Guys, I found them!
Isabel shouted into the radio. Brahim replied, but the sound of scrambling from the hatch was enough indication that the others were on their way. As they climbed up, Isabel frantically examined the other cocoons to find that there were several adults she didn't know. Based on the hair color, the second one could have been Jamie's mum. In the sixth, she finally found hers.
Mum?
Her mother was warm, but unconscious, her breathing shallow. No matter what Isabel did, she couldn't rouse her. She continued shaking, calling, and even slapping her mum to wake her. The others ran up behind her, all joining in the attempts to raise their loved ones with similar success. There's something wrong with them, Rahim commented. Not sure if it's a chemical in whatever they're all bundled in, or something else, but there's no waking them up. Valerie ran over to her dad.
Oh, thank God!
My best guess is that she's keeping them asleep and, well, fresh. Rahim spoke gravely, casting torchlight on the scattered bones on the ground to illustrate his point.
Frank! Where's Frank?
Jamie cut in, desperately searching the pods in vain for his missing brother. I don't see him here. Valerie joined Jamie in his frantic search efforts.
Guys!
As the others turned in response to Isabel's shout, she pointed silently into the very center of the nest. There, sleeping soundly, not in a cocoon, but on a soft mound of feathers, lay Frank. Jamie rushed the nest to reach his brother, but before he'd taken a second step, everyone froze, the blood turning to ice in their veins.
Oh, shit, Rahim uttered.
Everybody, get ready.
The bitch is back,
Isabel yelled. Jamie shouldered his crowbar. Rahim primed his camera flash. Isabel grabbed a jar of gasoline from her backpack, and Valerie clicked off the safety on her dad's rifle. The harpy swooped through the hole in the roof, landing with an almighty crash, scattering bones and entrails it had left scattered around the attic. It eyed the group of intruders and lurched towards them. The group split up.
Jamie killed his light and looked back towards the nest from his hiding place behind one of the attic support struts. One of the others must have dropped their torch as it now lay on the floor, illuminating the harpy as it inspected the nest for any damage. Feeling his heart thumping against his ribcage, he tightened his grip on the crowbar and hoped the others all remembered the plan. He closed his eyes and fought to steady his breathing. Frank and his mom both needed him now more than ever.
Satisfied that both her larder and her hostage remained in the nest, the harpy turned and let out a different sound to the screeches they'd heard previously. This was a gentler, almost cooing call. It was like the harpy was trying to coax them out of hiding. Jamie thought back to some of Rahim's theories on what the creature wanted, and then he thought about Frank being laid gently in the nest and the care package of bugs left at his house. Did this monster consider them children? A shrill mechanical wail from across the attic cut through the air in Jamie's train of thought. It was now or never. The harpy rushed toward the sound without hesitation, straight past Jamie's hiding place, leaving a route to the nest unguarded.
Hope you've got this, guys.
He bolted towards the nest, crowbar ready.
The harpy shrieked and confusedly stared at the pair of walkie-talkies screaming electronic feedback in protest of having been taped together. Not knowing what to make of the squealing devices at first, the harpy screeched and snapped its beak at it in an attempt to elicit some kind of response. Finally, it brought its talons down and smashed the walkie-talkies into a wreck of silent components. Right in the center of the noose.
Pull!
Rahim bellowed. The snare tightened around the harpy's foot before the creature could react. They had it! Rahim leapt from his hiding place, camera raised. Each flash sent the harpy reeling backwards. The creature was dazzled. It lashed out blindly in Rahim's direction. Rahim leapt back to avoid the confused attack, but kept triggering the flash the moment it charged. He needed to keep the harpy's attention.
Isabel stepped out from the darkness behind the harpy. She'd need to act fast. She discarded the lid of the first jar and flung as much gasoline over the harpy's back and wings as she could. Retrieving the second jar from under her arm, Isabel repeated the dousing, this time also trying to get more of the fuel around the creature's legs and onto the floor beneath it. Sensing it was surrounded, the harpy snapped at Isabel, forcing her to jump away from its maw. Isabel slipped on a bone fragment and landed with a hard whump on the floor.
Hey!
Rahim shouted, trying to wrestle the harpy's attention back to him. But with repeated uses, the flash had begun to lose its dazzling effect. Shaking its head, the creature glared down at Isabel as it towered over her. At this distance, Isabel could see the scorched feathers and seared flesh from their last encounter. She wondered if it remembered her. The looming harpy opened its black wings wide, the feathers gleaming in the scattered torchlight as fuel dripped from them. A shot rang out across the attic as an explosion of blood erupted from the harpy's right knee. Isabel covered her face.
Nice shot, Valerie, Rahim shouted.
The creature cried in pain and slumped forwards, trying to steady itself on its other leg. Isabel pulled her dad's lighter from her pocket and caught the harpy's eye as she struck the wheel to summon the flames. Watch the birdie!
Flames engulfed the harpy, the ferocious roar of the fire almost drowning out its pain screams as both Rahim and Isabel scrambled away towards where Valerie was standing, rifles still raised. The creature thrashed desperately against the rope that held it in place, erratically thrashing around and coated in fire. It looked like the devil's own personal kite. The three stood, watching as it burned. Intense heat radiated around the attic. Rahim had earned himself a few scratches from his close encounter, and Isabel nursed her hand where it looked like the flames had caught her. But they were just minor injuries. You should shoot it again, Rahim said quietly as the struggles and cries began to die down. Finish it off. Nodding, Valerie took aim. With a sudden, final surge of desperate strength, the harpy flung itself forwards through the air towards the group of children. The rope, damaged by the flames, gave way and snapped. Valerie pulled the trigger in panic. but in her haste she missed. The bullet flew harmlessly to lodge somewhere into the attic wall. The harpy barreled into them.
Jamie sprinted towards the group just in time to see the harpy snatch Valerie and crash blindly into several of the support beams holding up the school roof near the existing opening. Looking on helplessly, he felt his heart sink as the strut splintered and shattered with the force of the impact, bringing another large section of the roof collapsing down onto both the harpy and, more importantly, Valerie. The flames began to extinguish, hungrily eating through the harpy's wings and caught by the rain which poured through the broken roof. Rahim and Isabel had been knocked aside in the attack and were struggling back to their feet. Jamie had broken everyone out of the cocoons and pulled Frank out of the nest, but he still hadn't been able to wake them up. He hoped they would return to consciousness in time. He looked through the clouds of dust kicked up by the collapse, looking for any sign of Valerie, and then he saw her, lying prone at the feet of the harpy. Its feathers were now pretty much all gone, and its wings were twisted, bald ruins, but somehow it was still standing. His fears, worries, and anxiety all disappeared in an instant, all replaced by a burning rage that consumed Jamie from head to toe. The harpy's own screech was drowned out when Jamie roared and raced through the attic towards the monster, crowbar in one hand, kitchen knife in the other. As soon as he was within reach, Jamie plunged the knife into the harpy's chest. The skin, already blistered and burned, erupted with black blood oozing from every cut he made, but it still didn't go down. Bloody, clawed hands seized Jamie by the waist and lifted him off the ground until he was eye to eye with the beast. With a screech, the harpy dug its beak into Jamie's chest. It burned and stole his breath as the razor-sharp beak gouged into him. The world seemed to shrink, and he heard the knife clink as it hit the floor. With one final scream of, "Die, you bastard!" Jamie raised the crowbar and plunged it into the creature's eye. He felt some resistance, but kept pushing, forcing the bar deeper into its skull. The harpy gurgled, grunted, and threw its head back with a hideous scream. It began to topple backwards as its grip on Jamie loosened. They both fell. It was dark for a while. Jamie was less aware of the pain in his chest now, but couldn't bring himself to move.
"Jamie! Jamie, wake up!"
Forcing his eyes open, he saw Valerie, covered in cuts and dust, but alive. Rahim and Isabel arrived and gathered around him too, cradling his injured body.
"Hey, guys," he managed weakly. "Is it?"
"Yeah, it's dead," Isabel finished. "You killed it."
"No, we killed it,"
Jamie corrected her.
"Just hang in there, buddy."
Rahim had taken hold of his hand and squeezed it tightly. Jamie fought to keep his eyes open. He was suddenly very tired.
"Jamie?"
A voice called from the other side of the attic. He'd know that voice anywhere.
"Frank,"
Jamie managed. A smile crossed his lips as he collapsed back into darkness.
Frank lay frustrated in the hospital bed. He and all the other victims of the nest felt fine as soon as they'd woken up, but the sheriff and the doctors had made everyone who'd been witness to the night's events stay in the hospital for an extra few days while they ran their tests. He supposed it wasn't too bad. The doctors had said he was allowed ice cream with his dinner if he behaved. "Hey, Squirt." Jamie's friends were at the doors of his room, his mother standing behind them in her hospital gown. They'd visited each other a lot since he'd been in hospital, and he hoped they'd still get a chance to hang out after he got home. Rahim gave him his own walkie-talkie so he could join in on their radio talks, and Valerie said he could come to one of their horror movie nights. Isabel, gave him a dead arm for making fun of her hair, but she was okay too. When, a short time later, the guys left, his mum waited behind. "Frank, sweetie, I know I haven't been the best at looking after you and your brother these last few months. I promise I'm going to do better. Okay?" "Okay, mum." Frank smiled. "The doctors say you're allowed to go home today," she added. "I'm going to go and see them quickly. Get your stuff ready to go. Your brother will need to stay here a little longer, but if we're quiet, we can visit with him quickly before we go home." After his mum left, Frank leapt out of his bed and rushed to his backpack. Opening the zip, he stared at the egg, which felt warm and delicate in his hands. His plan to keep it safe, wrapped in his clothes, had been working. He still couldn't quite believe that no one else had seen the little black oval in the nest. He rubbed a hand gently along its curves. When he had found it, he knew the adults would never let him keep it if they knew, so he just hid it in his bag. He'd soon find a warm, safer spot to raise it back home. Thank you for listening to the final act of The Nest, titled Enter the Nest. This episode was written by Andy Conduit-Turner with the help of the entire Halloween 2019 writing team, including Andy Conduit-Turner, Ben Arrington, Daniel Wilcox, and John Crinan. This episode was edited by Carl Hughes, the Gandalf the White of the audio wizarding world, and he's a member of the Hawk and Cleaver team. You can hear his work every week on the Other Stories podcast. The Nest theme music was produced by Tim O'Henderson. Visit timohenderson.com to check him out. Quality and checking for The Nest was done by Andy Conduit-Turner. Some of the music you heard was produced by AdneonLux. You can check him out over at soundcloud.com/AdneonLux. Other music you heard was produced by Chris Zabriskie. You can check him out at chriszabriskie.com. He's had a lot of his tracks featured on the Other Stories. And the same goes for Mayu. Check Mayu out over at soundcloud.com/Mayu, spelled M-Y-U-U. Other music, sounds and effects are provided by zapsplat.com and freesound.org. And also The Nest illustration was provided by Luke Spooner of Carry On House Illustration, and the cover design was by Ben Arrington himself. My final factoid of this little series is the truest of all things I've ever said. You, dear listener, are one of a kind. You are a beautiful soul, and I'm so glad you spent these past 5 episodes with us, or more if you're a regular listener of the Other Stories. Halloween is a time for embracing the dark and giving it a big kiss on the face and saying that we can beat you. So thank you again from all of us at Hawk and Cleaver. Happy Halloween.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight. and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.